This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Food for Thought, Toxific Review, Season 3. I'm your host, Neo Gentrix, the podcast where we chew on the big ideas that shape our lives. And today, we're diving deep into a topic that, let's be honest, almost all of us have wrestled with, procrastination. You know that feeling, right? You have a huge project due, a deadline is staring you down, but suddenly, cleaning your desk or organizing your bookshelf becomes the most urgent task in the world. We've all been there, trust me. And what do we usually tell ourselves in that moment? We call it laziness, a lack of discipline, maybe even a character flaw. But what if I told you all of that was a lie? A growing body of scientific research is completely reframing how we understand procrastination. It's not a moral failing, okay? It's a complex and deeply ingrained psychological phenomenon. This is today's food for thought. The common belief that procrastination is more about time management is a fundamental misunderstanding. In reality, bad time management is just a symptom of a much deeper emotional struggle. Think about it. When you label your own avoidance as laziness, you're actually making the problem worse. You're adding a whole new layer of negative emotions, like guilt and shame to the mix that have nothing to do with it. This extra emotional baggage makes the task you're already avoiding feel even more unpleasant, which only increases your brain's impulse to avoid it even further. It's a vicious cycle where beating yourself up actually fuels the fires of procrastination and makes the whole situation a lot bigger and more grand than it should be. So, the first step to breaking this cycle isn't just to try harder to apply the willpower. The first step is actually to dismantle what I'm calling the laziness lie, if you catch what I'm saying. And replace that self-blame with some genuine self-awareness. So today, we're going to deconstruct this myth. We'll explore procrastination as a problem of emotional regulation. We'll also look at the neuroscientific conflicts happening within your brain, you know, the little squiggly cell on the top of your head that helps you think, and identify the common triggers, and most importantly, I'll give you a whole suite of evidence-based strategies to take back control. You ready? Let's break that down, shall we? Alright, everybody, let's begin with part one, the why. Emotional, but yet not a time. Oh. So, what is the real reason we procrastinate? Modern psychologists and consensus says that procrastination is fundamentally an emotion regulation problem, a time management issue. Scientifically, procrastination is the voluntary and unnecessary delay of a task you intended to do, even though you know that delay will just lead to harmful consequences in the long run. And that's a key distinction. As Dr. Tim Cycle, I guess that's how you pronounce this guy's name, Pycyl, puts it, All procrastination is delay. Not all delays is procrastination. The funny work for a family emergency is a rational choice. It's not procrastination. Will you go off to watch TV when you know there's a deadline will mean death procrastination? That's the irrational act that we're talking about right there. The core idea here is something called temporal mood regulation. Okay? We procrastinate on the tasks that make us feel bad. Any task that makes us feel bad, we tend to put it off. That's that trigger anxiety, boredom, or self-doubt. Believe it or not, I'm just as guilty of this as anyone else. Most of the time I put off a task, it's not because I don't want to do it or I can't do it, it's because I'm bored. I have to at least admit that. First step is always admitting that there's a problem before you can actually go forward. But hey, we all do it as a short-term strategy to manage our intermediate moods, however we're feeling. You're not actually avoiding the task itself. You're just avoiding the uncomfortable feeling that task brings up inside you, more or less. By sidestepping those difficult emotions, your present self gets an immediate reward, relief. But that relief comes at a huge cost to your future self, who has to still face the same task. But now you're under even greater pressure. And that's not exactly fun for you, is it? Now, this internal struggle you feel, it's not just a metaphor. It's a literal neurological tug of war happening inside your head between two very different parts of your brain, the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex. First up, the limbic system. This is one of the oldest, most dominant parts of your brain. It's your, as I say, automatic, powerful emotional hub. Its main job is to seek immediate reward and avoid discomfort. In the other corner, you have your prefrontal cortex. It's a more recently evolved and therefore weaker part of the brain, if you will. As they've defined it, it's your brain's CEO or rational planner, handling things like long-term planning and impulse control. Procrastination happens when the limbic system's primary screen for immediate emotional relief overpowering the prefrontal cortex logical long-term planning. Basically, you want the sweet relief versus trying to actually do the work. It's like trying to keep yourself from going to use the bathroom, knowing you have to go because you have to finish something, but the urge just kind of is there, pushing, till at some point you give in and you go. You get the sweet relief now, you do feel better, but then what happens? You still have all that work you gotta go back and do. You know? The limbic system is your brain's default setting, okay? If your PFC isn't actively engaged, your brain will automatically do what feels right in the current moment. This is why a lot of people, when bored, tend to go drive off into a different direction, not literally drive, but fall off in a different direction and do random stuff that they know they really shouldn't be doing. This battle has been reinforced by dopamine. Y'all remember this, we've talked about this before in previous episodes. When you give in and do something distracting, your brain's reward system releases a little hint of this feel-good chemical, alright? This creates a powerful feedback loop that actually strengthens the neural pathways for avoidance. Each time your limbic system wins, that procrastination habit gets more and more automatic to the point where you just kind of do it without thinking. So, consider that in the process of what you're doing, that the moment you feel like you should probably go do something else because it feels better rather than doing the task you need to do, you should probably face up and just go ahead and do the task that needs to get done. The longer you hold it off, the more likely it is you'll never get around to it. Welcome back. We're going to go and talk about the triggers that masking your procrastination profile. So, first off, to really beat procrastination, you have to know your enemy. The act of delay is often a symptom of a deeper trigger. Let's unmask the most common ones, okay? First off, task aversionness. We're biologically wired to avoid things we find unpleasant. A task might be boring, frustrating, difficult, unstructured, or just lack personal meaning. The more of these boxes we tick with tasks tick, That's it. There's a phrase. The more of these boxes that we, of tasks that we take off, the more you're going to resist it. In other words, the more work you have to deal with in a short period, the more daunting it feels, the more likely it is you're going to want to not do it. Second thing is perfectionism, or fear of failure, which I feel like fear of failure is something we should definitely talk about in the future moving forward, so look forward to that. But anyway, for a perfectionist, the real fear isn't the task itself. It's producing something that falls short of impossibly high standards. It feels psychologically safer to not even try than to risk creating an imperfect product. I've been there, and it took a while for me to climb down that ladder. The fear of success, this is another one. Sometimes succeeding in itself is something that people are afraid of, and therefore they don't wish to do anything. It's a fascinating one when you think about it. Success can bring its own anxieties, new responsibilities, higher expectations, and more visibility. Although procrastination can also become a way to unconsciously self-sabotage yourself to avoid those heavy consequences. As a result, that kind of brings us to the fourth one. Decision paralysis. I know you've heard it before. It's a thing that exists. This happens when you're overwhelmed by choices or the fear of making the wrong one, that you just can't make any decision at all. Avoidance feels like a relief in the time being, except it's only temporary, like the feeling or high that coffee gives you. Remember, we talked about this before. Now it falls into the same category, not quite procrastination. The suspicions of coffee is more related to how your body deals with energy and drowsiness. The last one is low self-efficacy. This is the belief in your own ability to succeed. Kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for here? I do believe it is self-confidence. When it's low, you doubt yourself, which triggers anxiety. Procrastination then becomes a defensive mechanism to postpone that anticipated failure, because you don't want to have to sit there and deal with the result of not doing good enough because you don't think that you're possibly capable of doing better. Researchers break these patterns down into different archetypes. Basically, the question to ask is, are you the perfectionist, the worrier, the crisis maker who thrives on the last minute pressure, or the dreamer who loves planning but hates doing any of it? If I'm being perfectly honest here, and I'm talking about myself as a whole here, there are times I find myself in the dreamer category. I like planning and I like doing a lot of different things. But sometimes when it comes down to doing it, it just seems like too big or too daunting a task. Or worse, I start off in the dreamer archetype, and I end up moving over to the perfectionist archetype, where now I'm trying to perfect everything that I'm doing to the point where I'm actually avoiding finishing the project entirely. You don't have to be any one of these four or five things. You could end up being in multiple categories by trying to avoid being in a certain none. You know, moments where I feel like I'm the dreamer, I'm fine, but then I realize I'm not doing anything, so I try to work on it, because then now that puts me in the worrier category. Now I'm trying to make sure I finish it, but then I'm looking at what I'm doing, and I'm like, this isn't good enough. So then I move into the perfectionist category, archetype. You know, I'm trying to get it done, get it right, get it right, get it right, get it right, until I realize that I don't have a whole lot of time to still finish this, and now I'm in the crisis maker archetype. Not very many people fall into all four or five. But then again, at the same time, not everyone has the same issues. Now, you notice I said four, not five, right? That's because the last one with the self-confidence issue isn't as common. This is one that's more of a personal thing. It depends on how you were raised or how you look at issues as a whole. It can affect your ability to do work, which then in itself makes it its own level of procrastination in the six ones that I listed. But the top four, being the procrastinator, the warrior, the crisis maker, and the dreamer, these are the four that are the main issues and the main driving problems, especially for students nowadays. Identifying your profile is a huge step in finding the right strategy to fight back, and I recommend this for a lot of people, especially those who are good at doing whatever it is they need to do, but it takes them a while to get there. All right. Time for the last part of this. Let's talk about the antidote, a toolkit for taking action. Okay, so we've diagnosed the problem, now for the antidote. Overcoming procrastination isn't about becoming a productivity machine, okay? It's about becoming a more self-aware, compassionate strategist, if you will. And the foundational mindset shift you need is a radical self-compassion. In other words, be nicer to yourself, okay? The more effective antidote to delay is not harsher discipline, but greater self-kindness. When you procrastinate and you berate yourself, you're just amplifying the guilt and the shame that made you make the task feel awful in the first place. It's better not to make the situation worse. If anyway, it's better to try to find a way to solve it by going easier on yourself in the sense like, oh, okay, well, I wasn't able to do it. I failed it. But the bright side is I now know what I don't need to do or what not to do, and I can move forward from there. You know, like, what did you learn? Okay. Forgiving yourself for past procrastination actually reduces the likelihood that you'll actually do it again, because you're becoming a little bit more forgiving. And this kind of also relates to a topic that I plan to cover next, which is forgiving others. Before you can start worrying about how to forgive others and move forward, you gotta first learn how to forgive yourself. Because most of the blame when it comes to issues moving forward, especially in relationships and dealing with other people, is the inability to forgive others, even when it isn't their fault, or is in some cases. There's times where issues have occurred and I know it's their fault, but I'm still going to forgive them anyway. Because if I can't forgive them, or I can't forgive myself for allowing it to happen in the first place, I'm never going to be able to forgive anyone else, and I'm just going to be walking around with a chip on my shoulder. You'll never get anything done that way. Once you have that foundation, you can start using some practical tools. So, with that being said, let's build your toolkit. First things first, the two-minute rule. If a task takes less than 2 minutes, just do it. Do it immediately. For bigger tasks, the goal is to start working on it, even if it's just for 2 minutes. This lowers the mental barrier and helps you build momentum. By doing it in 2 minute bursts, here and there, you'll get little bits of it done at a time, to the point where at some point you'll be almost finished. You'll be like, oh, well, if that's all I have to do, then you'll just go get it done. It's simple as that. Then there's the other part of it. The next one is tasks decomposition, or, as I was just explaining, chunking. Break a huge ambiguous project like writing a report, or in my case, writing a book, or writing a chapter, right? I do a series of small, concrete, manageable subtasks, like find the resources, you know, for your report. This makes the project feel less strained. Like, this is how I handle writing my books, okay? A lot of people ask me if I'm able to write, how do I write my books? How long does it take me to write it? I could also tell them it doesn't take me more than a week or two to write most of my stories that I have to write. This isn't me showing off. This is me telling you that the reason that I'm able to do this is because instead of looking at it as a story as a whole, I break it up into three sections. I have a beginning, middle, and end. And then I break those sections down into chapters. Then I break those chapters into smaller sections. By writing them in sections and then writing them as chapters as a whole, like each chapter is its own individual, small, short story, it's a lot easier to focus on the whole thing and get it done by writing it chapter by chapter by chapter by chapter. And if I happen to go a little bit longer than I originally wanted for either each chapter, or I write an extra chapter or two, that's not a problem because it's smaller tasks, easier things that are a lot better to digest, so it makes it easier to progress forward. Which kind of brings me to the third tool, eat the frog. I know it sounds stupid, and most of y'all will be like, no, I don't want to eat a frog, that's gross. That's not what I mean by that. Identify your single most dreaded task of the day. That is your frog. I don't know why it sounded weird when I said that, but that's the idea. And do it first thing in the morning, when your willpower and cognitive resources are at its peak. By doing the thing you dread the most in the morning, the first task that you touch, after you've had your morning coffee and everything else, right? You knock it out early. By knocking that out early, it becomes the least likely issue of cause or provocation or procrastination. This will keep you on task. It'll allow you to move forward. And again, you're still chunking. You're still breaking everything down into sections. But now you're able to get it done faster because you're focusing on the portions that you know are going to be the hardest to get. Which brings us to the fourth tool in this toolkit, the Pomodoro technique. Work in a focused 25-minute interval, okay? The 2-minute interval issue is great for when you're handling small tasks like creating outlines or something. When you're focusing on the bigger things, focusing on 25-minute intervals separated by short 5-minute breaks, well, this gamifies the work, preventing burnouts, and it aligns with your brain's natural attention cycles. Now, some people have longer attention cycles, and this worked fine. I'm one of them. I can sit here and work for an hour and a half on something without losing concentration unless someone comes in and bothers me. And this is great, especially when you're working on bigger projects, handling homework assignments, or in college students' case, multiple homework assignments from different, you know, classes all on the same day, especially when you have exams coming up, you know? But I'm pretty sure, like now, that we are at the end of September, so midterms should be coming up soon, if they haven't already started. So this is something that would definitely help when handling homework assignments, projects, or anything of the like, and get them knocked out as soon as possible. All right, everybody. So, what's the big takeaway from all of this? The journey to understand procrastination reveals a profound shift. It's not a character flaw or deliberate laziness, but a deeply human, emotional-driven coping mechanism. Overcoming it isn't about brute force. It's about replacing that cycle of avoidance and self-criticism with a cycle of awareness and action. The path forward begins not with an iron will, but with a single compassionate act of self-forgiveness. The ultimate goal is not the total elimination of procrastination, but the cultivation of progress, one small intentional step at a time. This is something for you guys to keep in mind moving forward. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in to Food for Thought. I'm Mia Gentrich, reminding you to think deeply and be kind to yourself. If you haven't already, feel free to check me out on any of the many platforms that I'm on, whether it's iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it. I'm even on Deezer and YouTube. And if you're on YouTube and you're listening to this podcast here, don't forget to leave a comment down below on what you liked about this episode or any future topic you would like to see me cover. That's it for today. Have a great rest of your day.